Welcome to A New Lens with Common Good Capital, where we talk with investors, RIAs, fund managers, and philanthropists about the experiences within different impact investing themes, as we'll explore the power of stewardship and capital. I'm your host, Jeff Schaefer, CEO of Common Good Capital. Today is going to be amazing. I've been waiting for this. We get the opportunity to get into the head and heart of Pete Oakes. Pete is founder and chairman of Capital 3, an impact investment company with investments in the U.S. and Central America, which I'm sure we'll learn about. During his four decades in the business, he's invested and operated companies in energy, manufacturing, banking, and education sectors, and then oftentimes focusing on places void of human flourishing, such as prisons and poverty-stricken countries. Pete and I met because of the prison side. So Pete, thanks for joining us today.
Jeff, it's a pleasure and an honor to be here.
Well, let's dig in right away. Give us a bit of your background. Where did you grow up? When you went to school, and then just a high level of your career.
So I'm a Kansas farm kid, grew up farming, learned the work ethic at a very early age, went to Kansas University my junior year. In fact, I spent 2 years in pre-med. I was going to be a dentist. My junior year, I took a class in business to figure out how I was going to invest all the money I made as a dentist. And about 2 weeks in, I said, whoa, I'm not a dentist. I'm a business guy. So I changed majors. Got out, went in the commercial banking business, spent 8 years there. At the age of 30, I started my own investment banking company. Mm-hmm. We did that for 20 years, from the age of 30 to 50. In the middle of that, we violated the number one rule of business, and that is we fell in love with some of our inventory, and we began to acquire some of the companies that we actually were representing. And so we moved from actually being an intermediary to a principal in the 1990 timeframe. Mm-hmm. Bought several companies during the 1990s, did the typical leveraged buyout thing, put a little down, levered them a lot, ran them hard. 4 or 5 years later, we would flip them. Did really well during that stretch. 9/11 hit, was hard on us. I think at 40, I had a major in at 1990-ish, 1992-ish. I had a major right-hand turn in life, and I went from being an owner to a steward. I went from pursuing success to pursuing significance. I would say 10 years later, 9/11 taught me another lesson, and I went from pursuing significance to trying to pursue surrender. The last 20 years, we owned several privately held companies. 2006, one of those companies was rapidly growing. We didn't have enough workers, and so we moved into the prison system. We literally today have over 100,000 square feet in a maximum security prison. We employ 220 inmates, and we are really trying to inculcate a certain way of doing business. And so that's what we're doing today, and it's been good, and it's been rewarding.
I could ask you 1,000 different questions right now, but I'm going to focus 2 real fast. So at 30, I guess 30 to 40, or you tell me, what would have been your driving force in business at that age?
Sure. It would have been the pursuit of success, really monetary financial success. And I can't say it was just all consuming. I just wanted to do well. I didn't want to get rich. I wanted to do well. And unfortunately, Jeff, I think I bifurcated my life. I had my Christian life and I had my business life. I was a good Christian on Sunday, and then I just did business. It wasn't that I did bad business. It wasn't that I was a heathen Christian during the other 6 days, but they were not intertwined. They were not one and the same. And at 40, when I understood I was really a steward and not an owner, that rocked my world and things changed.
And was there an event that created that?
There was. I had actually made our first acquisition, which was the acquisition of a failing bank. And I got in there and I was a madman. I was repossessing assets. I was suing people. And one of the customers who I was suing countersued me. And when I went to my attorney, he said, Pete, you're going to lose everything. I'd purchased the stock of the bank. So I inherited all of the prior liabilities that the previous owner had racked up in the bank. And so he had violated several lending practices when he had made this guy the loan, and that was coming back to haunt me. Mm-hmm. I was literally going to go out of business. I said, no, might is right. I have to stand in here for justice. So I went ahead and started depositions. I was spending $8,000 a day. I'd gone through 4 or 5 days of depositions. I was getting nowhere. On Friday, the last day of depositions for the week, I was reading my quiet time that morning in Proverbs 6. It says, if you've gotten yourself into it, this is the Oaks translation, okay?
Okay.
If you've gotten yourself in a jam, go humble yourself and beg to get out of the jam. And so at the end of the day, we went through another day of depositions. At the end of the day, I went up to the guy that was suing me. I knew him personally by then. And I said, Lynn, could we talk about this? His attorney was standing there and said, that's great. If you guys want to do that, fine. So on Sunday afternoon, I met him in his office. He came in, was kind of gruff voice. What'd you want? I got up out of my chair. I went over, I got down on my knees in front of his desk. And I said, Lynn, I'm a Christian. And in my quiet time on Friday morning, it said in Proverbs, if you've gotten yourself in a jam, go humble yourself and beg to get out of the jam. This lawsuit's got me in a jam. I will go bankrupt. And I'm begging you, let me out of the lawsuit. As I looked up, he began to weep uncontrollably. And he literally said, Pete, you know, I became a Christian 30 days ago and I didn't know how to get out of this lawsuit, but we need to talk about it. 10 minutes later, we had it settled. Jeff, it was the first time in my life that God's word had made sense and did something for me in business. It was because I was just too thick-headed and I'd bifurcated my life. But when we take God's word and use it as the operations manual for business, powerful things happen.
What a story. And that is not a picture of how you think about negotiating in today's world.
No, it's not. Look, desperate people do desperate things. Yeah, yeah. I was desperate.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to save the other question for later because it may come up. So you just told me, and hopefully this is okay. Otherwise, we'll delete it. You just turned 70. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So how would you best describe yourself in the context of where you're at in your life journey?
Yeah, great question. I've got two mentors. One's 96, one's 92. I've not made a major decision in life over the last 40 and 45 years without asking the two of those men. Very powerful thing for me. One of them says 0 to 25 is learning, 25 to 50 is doing, 50 to 75 should be teaching and passing it on. So I was a little late into the teaching game because I'm a doer. I like the game. I like the fight. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so it was only about 3 or 4 years ago that I got out of the serious doing. Mm-hmm. And over the last 3 or 4 years, I've really focused on how am I going to teach and pass it on. It's been a really, really difficult time for me to get out of the do it game. I've really gone from doing to teaching. And I am so excited about the next 10 years of my life. I can hardly stand it. I really am.
What's been hard about getting out of doing?
Well, it's that old thing about your self-worth. Mm-hmm. I'm a farm kid. When you work hard and you go to bed at night and you feel good about getting something done. And my self-worth was tied up in doing instead of being. Mm-hmm. And I think God has really taught me that before I can bear fruit, I have to be. And if I'm going to teach, I have to be. It's been a tough lesson for me, but we're on our way. So hopefully we can get through this.
Yeah, I watched, and I'm not comparing the two because I wouldn't say you're retiring, but I watched my dad, who's a physician, and from a worldly perspective, a successful physician, and I watched him try to retire. And he struggled with that very notion. It took him a little longer than to retire than he thought. But one of the things I'll give him massive credit on is the last several years, it was all about how do I teach the next generation doctors. And in that field, there's huge difference between when he was brought up versus today. So it's really cool to see guys like yourself, who you probably don't take the time to think about it, but you have so much experience in the fact that you can share that with others. That's got to be extremely rewarding.
It is. And I'm already seeing the fruit. You know, I have 4 or 5 small groups of young business people that I meet with on a regular basis. And I'm already seeing the fruit of just being able to pour into them. Yeah. So it's great.
Yeah. All right. So I'm sure you could answer this a number of ways. So don't feel like you got to give the only answer. But how are you trying to change the world today? Just a small one.
Yeah. Easy question. Huh? Well, you know, I love Jesus and I love business. So I'm trying to take those two things and triangulate them, as it were. And so essentially, I'm trying to take what God has taught me and come alongside younger business people and just say, look, these are the mistakes I've made. Don't do that if you can. And that has been, that really excites me and fires me up, because I think, you know, Milton Friedman won a Nobel Prize on the fact that the purpose of business is to maximize shareholder value.
Yep.
And while I don't have a big quibble with that, I quibble with it a bit. And I think the purpose of business is much greater than that. I think the purpose of business should be a catalyst for flourishing. Business should create economic, social, and spiritual capital. Those are the three things that all of us need to flourish. We need a good job. We need deep, authentic relationships. We need Jesus. And as business people, we are in a unique position, particularly for those of us who are the leaders and owners in business, to really come alongside of our people and help them flourish. Mm-hmm. I love the parable of the Good Samaritan. You know, the priest and the Levite, the spiritual guys, said they were walking down the road. They walked around him. He was laying in the ditch, beat up and dying. But the Good Samaritan, and I like to think of that person as a young entrepreneur or an entrepreneur, came along, picked him up, took him to the hotel, took care of him. And I think we've seen this in the prison. When we employ men and we lead with economic capital, we follow with great relationships, the doors to spiritual capital fly open. And I think that model works across all businesses.
All right. So you just opened the door here, because this is, you know, it's one of my dearest passions. What you just said, and I'm gonna be the antagonist here. Yeah, but you're just exploiting these guys in prison to make money. I mean, I'm sure you've heard that.
Yes.
So what's your answer?
All I can tell you is it is true that if you are in prison and you work, oftentimes for the state of whatever state you're in, for us, it's the state of Kansas, those men make somewhere between 50 cents and $1 per day. We do not pay them that. We pay them fair market value rates. In fact, we don't even set the salaries ourselves or their wages. The state of Kansas does. So if I have a welder, let's say, that's got 5 years of experience and he's welding for me, we'll look in the book and he may make $15, $20 an hour. And so we pay fair market value rates for their labor.
So step back and tell us, what is the business and how do you function inside of a prison?
Yes. So at this point in time, we are actually in two different prisons, a maximum security prison and a medium security prison. We have two different businesses. One is a company called Seat King. It manufactures industrial seating inside a maximum security prison. We employ probably 120 inmates in that business. We actually have about 50,000 square feet of business literally inside of a maximum security prison. We have welders. We make our own foam. This year, we'll build 750 or 800,000 seats in that maximum security prison. If you own a zero-turn lawnmower, there's probably a 50% chance you're sitting on our seat. Or that lawnmower has our wiring harness on it. So we have another business in a medium security prison called Electrix. It manufactures electrical assemblies, wiring harnesses, control panels, those kinds of things. We employ 150 folks in that business, and it's in a medium security prison. So yeah, entry-level manufacturing business, and it works well.
So I'm sure there's a lot of people listening today who have not been inside of a maximum or a medium security prison. Working in there, how long y'all been there? Almost 20 years now?
We have been there 17 years.
17 years. What would be to a group of people who've never experienced that, never been in a prison, never worked with somebody who's in prison, what would be some aha things that you've learned over the last 17 years?
First of all, is not everyone in there is wanting to murder you or sell you drugs. They may have done that, but I will tell you, of the 1,200 men in that prison, I will tell you, most all of the men that work for us are really good friends of mine, and I trust them almost implicitly. They were people who made a mistake and have wound up in prison. Have some of them done bad things? You betcha. And they're really, Jeff, I think there are really two types of people in prison. There are really the cold, hard criminal. And those people don't work for us. They are in segregation. They are tough. They've not been broken. And they would do something bad to you if they could. But there's a whole nother group of people in prison that have been broken, who are sorry for their sin, and who are working really diligently to be better people. Those are the people we get to employ inside the prison. So when we come alongside of them, and as I stated a little bit ago, you know, our philosophy of business is to create economic, social, and spiritual capital. So we come alongside of them. Our vision is to have the best prison in the United States of America, and we tell this to our inmates. And the way that we can have the best prison is if they are the best inmates. So we literally make a promise. We stand before them almost every month and make a promise to them that we are working to help them become the best people they can become. And when they do that, we will have the best prison. So we have 12 or 15,000 hours of online training available to them. We started a seminary in the prison. We've graduated 8. We've got another 23 in the system. We've built a million-dollar church inside of the prison. We just do lots of things to help them become the best people they can become, and they respond to that. Our recidivism rates, the rate that people go back to prison, is 7% versus 70% mm-hmm. nationally.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask you a question about capital, but before I do that, I'm going to ask you specifically a question about capital as it relates to inmates. So one of the things that I believe is that where your capital is, your heart will follow. So do you know how those guys or gals, whatever, how they use the capital that they earn from the business?
So 25% of what we pay them comes off the top and goes back to the state of Kansas for room and board.
Okay.
So this year, about $1.5 million earned by the folks that work for us will stay with the state of Kansas to pay for room and board. The next thing that happens is restitution or child support gets taken out. I had a gentleman come up to me a few months ago and said, Pete, thank you so much for the job. I'll be leaving you in 30 days and getting out. He said two things. I just paid off my $12,000 restitution for robbing a liquor store. And the second thing is he handed me the graduation announcement from college of one of his daughters. And he said, I've put both of my daughters through college because of this job.
Wow.
It costs 17 cents a minute to talk to your family. If you make 50 cents a day, you don't talk to your family. If you make $100 or $150 a day working for us, you'll talk to your family. You'll have relationships because of extra money.
Well, as you know, I've been in prisons all across the country. And what people don't realize that not all, but a lot of these men, they want to work. And the irony is there's not enough jobs for them all. And so let alone at the level of intentionality that you all pour into these guys. So as somebody who's talked to these men in prison, I can only imagine that people are clamoring to get in that are in, not to get into prison, but those that are in prison to get jobs with you. Do you have a waiting list? Do you have enough?
You know, we're growing rapidly, but there are dozens of men waiting to work for us. For them, it's a great privilege to be able to have a good job, to be treated like human beings. It's just an amazing thing.
Well, it's something you said earlier. It is inbred into us to want to be able to put our head down at night at the end of the day and feel like you've accomplished something.
Yes.
And unfortunately, those of us who are sitting outside these walls, it's easy to fall into a trap and forget that it's a blessing to have a job.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
All right. So switching back probably to the business side, or I don't know, maybe not. When did you realize the power of capital?
Well, let me start by saying I believe there are three kinds of capital. Actually, let me go back a little bit farther than that. I think there are three states of being that we all reside in: poverty, wealth, and capital. Poverty is simply not enough. Wealth is enough. And capital, I believe, is excess wealth that we are willing to put at risk. Now, that said, to flourish, back to my previous comments, there are three things that you need in life to flourish. You need a job, which gives you economic capital so you can have food, clothing, and shelter and those basics. The second thing we need is deep, authentic relationships, social capital. And the third thing we need is Jesus. We need to have a purpose, a moral code for living. It's called spiritual capital. I can have Jesus and I can have a lot of friends, but if I don't have food to eat, I'm not flourishing. Mm-hmm. You have to have all three forms of capital to flourish. So those of us who have a good job and a little bit of money, who have a fair amount of friends and know Jesus, are wealthy. Some of us have more. Remember, capital is more than enough. It's excess wealth we're willing to put at risk. So those of us who have excess financial capital, what are we doing with it? And I love the parable of the talents because you know the story. Mm-hmm. You had a master who was leaving. What he did was he took 5 talents and 2 talents and 1 talent. He took wealth. He gave wealth to 3 servants. 2 of them took risk with it and doubled up their money. 1 was fearful and buried it in his tent. So the question for us, Jeff, is what are we doing with economic, social, and spiritual capital? If we have excess economic capital, are we saving it for ourselves and spending it on ourselves as wealth? Are we taking risk with it? Social capital, what are you doing with the relationships you have? Are you sharing them with people? Are you continuing to build those relationships? And what if you know Jesus? What are you doing with that? Are you sharing him with people or are you burying him in the bottom of your tent? And so I think those of us who have capital, it is imperative that we understand that we need to take risk with our money, with our friends, and with Jesus, and put him to work.
Yeah, what you don't realize is what finally got me off the fence after I had left the executive world, trying to figure out how to go into impact investing. You know, when you grow up in the financial world, it's all about risk mitigation. Yeah, you know, you want to get this right balance. And so I'm like, do I go start Common Good? Do I go spend all this money? Actually, where I struggle with is like, that's not being a good steward because there's a high probability it doesn't work. But that parable challenged me and it was, no, if I've called you to do it, well, first of all, if it's not your capital to begin with, then risk looks totally different.
Absolutely.
And then it's like, okay, my job is to be faithful. It's not to worry about the outcome, which on my best days, I believe that. On my worst days, I struggle with that.
Yes. You know, you asked me, when did I understand the power of capital? I think I understood the power of financial capital early on. In my early 20s, I really understood it in the 40s when I became an owner. I don't think I understood the power of social and spiritual capital in a business until we went inside of a prison. And at that point in time, when I saw these men living in a desert of human flourishing, and then when we brought economic, social, and spiritual capital to them, oh my goodness, these men bloomed in a desert of human flourishing.
Yeah, and that totally makes sense. And what, as soon as you say that, and this is where a lot of people are not going to get this, and you will, unfortunately, we see a lot of people outside of the prison system who are just as much in the desert as those guys that are in. And so,
absolutely.
And so to me, I mean, what a great lesson from those men in prison to go, oh my gosh, put a mirror and how many of us outside of these walls, we're not flourishing.
Yes.
And actually, to some degree, I think it's harder for people outside of prisons to actually get it because they, in theory, are free. Well, no, they're not.
Well, I can give you a great example of that. We have a generosity program where we match the giving of our team members, both in the prison and civilians outside of the prison. Our team members who are inmates and in the prison outgive on a pro rata basis our civilians who are outside of the prison. And I believe they do that because they are so grateful for their job and so thankful. The rest of us on the outside are not grateful. Our gratitude is small. In fact, we even expect it to happen. It's an expectation. It's a right to us. And it is so fun to see these generous inmates. It's amazing.
You may have already answered this question, but I'll still pose it to you and you can go from there. Is what does stewardship mean to you? And maybe that's changed over time even.
You know, the strict definition of stewardship is simply the management of another's assets or resources, okay? And so at the age of 40, when I went from being an owner to a steward, I thought stewardship was only about material or financial management of things. I have since learned that it's the stewardship of our life. And life is an acrostic that stands for your labor, your influence, your financial resources, and your expertise. So it's this more holistic management of what God has given you, your labor, which is your time, your influence, which is your tribe, your financial resources, which is your treasure, and your expertise, which is your talent. And so I think it's the holistic management of those for the kingdom and for God's sake that really matters.
Tell you what, I've asked that question to a lot of people, and I think you may have just summed it up as sweet as I've heard it. And honestly, that visual was really helpful as well. All right, so we'll end with this. If you could have a dream come true, and for the sake of being, let's leave your family out of it because everybody wants to put that in there. If you have one dream come true before you put your head down on this earth for the last time, what would it be?
So if I leave my family out, it would be that we would see a movement of young, faith-driven, Christ-centered entrepreneurs come to understand that they are stewards and not owners, and that they come to understand the power of the platform of business, and that they can truly impact the world in a mighty way by being catalysts for flourishing.
And how does one stay balanced in what you just said when you're running a business? I mean, it's so easy to drift. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I think it comes down to one word, and that's accountability. I have numerous accountability mechanisms built into my life. I don't think one is just enough. So as I mentioned to you earlier, I have a 96 and a 92-year-old mentor. They're still alive, and I still meet with them on a regular basis. I have a peer mentor. He's a brother by a different mother. He sees life as I see it in real time. He's about my age. I have two younger mentors, one being my son, and two actually other younger guys. I love considering them as mentors because the old guys give me a historical look at it. My peer mentor gives me a real-time look at it, and the young guys give me hope for the future. And then there's just another group of guys that are about my age, and you know some of these guys. We meet on a regular basis, and we have agreed that nothing is off the table. Everything is on the table, and we regularly talk about the issues that can get in our way of being the people that Christ wants us to be, whether it's money, sex, pride, pleasure, possessions. I just think the accountability piece is really, really, really important.
Well, I've knew some of that. And as I sit here listening to myself or to you, I'm thinking, how do I have that in place? And there's some, but you've just challenged me. I'm going to go figure out how to get more of that in place because I have. And we all do. We have plenty of examples where when it's not in place, that's not a good thing. So I appreciate you sharing that because it just hit a chord with me to go, okay, I gotta go figure that out in a much deeper way. So thanks for being vulnerable and sharing that.
You bet.
Well, I've really appreciated this. And I not to bolster you up too much because I don't want to put you on a pedestal, but I do need to let you know that when your name comes up in the circles that I run in, you have lived a very well-lived life, one that is constantly striving to do better, to love others more. And so just know that at least the reputation that I hear of you is nothing but, man, this is the high integrity guy. So commend you for, and then I see now some of the stuff that you have in place to ensure that. So commend you what you're doing in the prisons. I can only imagine how many guys someday when you have passed on will be at your funeral and cheering you on for what you've done and giving them a second chance. So you're inspiring to me, and I know you're inspiring to others. So thanks. And don't forget to subscribe to A New Lens with Common Good Capital on your podcast app of choice. Please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. This will help new listeners find the show and hopefully put them on a path to a more fulfilling portfolio within the impact investing space. I'm Jeff Schaefer. Until next time, Pete, anything you want to say in closing?
God bless you. Love your purpose, live with passion, and leverage your platform.
This podcast is a production of Common Good Capital and does not constitute an offer or a solicitation of an offer. Such offer would only be made through a private placement memorandum. Prospective investors in private placement securities should be aware that making an investment is speculative and involves a high degree of risk, including the risk of losing all or a portion of an investment. Investments of this nature are illiquid and subject to substantial restrictions upon transferability.